The Case and Cure of a Deserted Soul by Joseph Simmons. Part 10. Chapter 21. The thirds means to retain a diverse divine presence is prayer, in which care must be had of the rise, carriage, and end of it. Thirdly, take this direction. Beg for his assisting grace. Prayer is the way to get it. In the sight of your deadness, look up to the God of life and pray with David. Make me to go in the path of thy commandments, for therein do I delight. Incline my heart unto thy testimonies, and not to covetousness. Turn away mine eyes from beholding vanity, and quicken thou me in thy way. Quicken me after thy loving kindness, O Lord. Quicken me according to thy judgment. Consider how I love thy precepts, O Lord, according to thy loving kindness. Psalm 119, 35 through 37, 88, 149, and 159. When you find your spirit willing, yet weak, and that you cannot walk in your way without help, then go to God and pray as David did. Uphold me according to thy word, that I may live. Hold thou me up, and I shall be safe, and I will have respect unto thy statutes continually. Psalm 119, verses 116 through 117. In your prayer for help, I will put forward three things to consider for better direction: the rise, carriage, and end of your desire. Number one, the rise of it must be, letter A strong desire to walk with God. When you come in truth, you are likely to prevail. Help is often desired out of custom, and in this way, many prayers are lost. Therefore, get your heart to love the way, and when your heart is with God, his hand will be with you. David used this argument in seeking the help of God. Make me to go in the path of thy commandments, for therein do I delight. Psalm 119, verse 35. Let thine hand help me, for I have chosen thy precepts. Verse 173. With my whole heart have I sought thee, oh, let me not wander from thy commandments. Verse 10. Take heed, lest your heart draw back when you seem to crave his grace, so that you may walk in his ways. For in such, God has no pleasure. Letter B. The rise must be necessity. Be sensible of your own insufficiency, taking heed of trusting in your own strength. I have shown the evil of this before. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart, and lean not unto thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. Proverbs 3, verses 5 and 6. But be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Ephesians 6, verse 10. He that sees and considers the multiplicity and spiritual nature of his duties, the variety and activeness of his corruptions, and the swarms and violence of temptations which lie in his way, will see that he stands in need of a greater strength than his own, so that he may break through, walk on, and preserve or persevere unto the end. And he will be forced to use such language as you find. Hear me speedily, O Lord, my spirit faileth. Hide not thy face from me, lest I be like unto them that go down into the pit. Cause me to know the way wherein I should walk, for I lift my soul unto thee. Teach me to do thy will, for thou art my God. Thy spirit is good. Lead me into the land of uprightness. Quicken me, O Lord, for thy name's sake. Psalm 143, verse 7 through 11. And he will cry out, We have no might against this great company that cometh against us, neither know we what to do, but our eyes are upon thee. 2 Chronicles 20, verse 12. Necessity must make you beggars. You must see that you cannot live upon the stock which you have received. God has not given you so much that you should be able to subsist without him. The more indignant and poor you are, the more welcome you are to God. Your need shall find his favor. He filleth the hungry with good things, Psalm 107, verse 9. Go then and take up David's words. I am poor and needy. Make haste unto me, O God. Thou art my help and my deliverer. O Lord, make no tarrying. Psalm 70, verse 5. And say as Moses, if thy presence go not with me, carry us not hence. For wherein shall it be known here that I and thy people have found grace in thy sight? Is it not that in that thou goest with us? Exodus 33:15-16. Go with the apostle and pray much, and you shall have like answer from heaven. My grace is sufficient for thee. 2 Corinthians 12:8-9. Number 2. The carriage and managing of your requests in this case must be aright, with confidence in the might and mercy of God. You have abundant cause for cheerfulness in coming to him, for besides the fact that it is his glory to hear, and that our intercessor, who has taught us to pray that we would not be led into temptation, but be delivered from evil, and that he prayed for us himself, is with him and dear to him. Consider that it is God's glory that the life and strength of his people depends upon him. He helped Jesus Christ, our head, Isaiah 42:6. And if he should not help you, the work would not be perfected, and all that Christ has done would come to nothing. God has called you to this way and has appointed you by it to come to help him, or to come to him, so that his end should fail if he does not help you. For this cause you have but little in yourselves, that you might live daily upon his alms. God leaves you in a necessity, so that he may better show his mercy. He will uphold what his hand has built. You have had experiences of his presence. If he had not been with you, you would not now be with him. His promise is with you. Lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the world. Matthew 28:20. It is a full promise, like a stream of living waters running in the church forever. He did not say, I will be with you, but I am with you, that we might be confident of his constant presence. And he has laid up much treasure in this promise, and therefore bids us look well into it. He excites by the word, lo, which he sets as a beacon on a hill, or as a special mark upon the head of this promise, as having much in it. Therefore, come to God in much assurance. He hates suspicion and jealousies. Let us therefore come boldly unto the throne of grace, that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in the time of need. Hebrews 4:16. This may be your comfort, that what you have not in yourselves, you have in God, and what you have in God is yours by promise. Go then and sue God upon his own bond, for God will be sought, and prayer is the key of the promise. Ezekiel 36:36-37. Though God is our friend, he may pass us by if he is not called upon. And when he is going from us, prayer takes hold. When Christ, having come to Emmaus, made as if he would have gone further, the disciples constrained him, saying, abide with us. And he replied by staying with them. Luke 24:28-29. David found God when he sought him. In the day when I cried, thou answered me and strengthened me with the strength in my soul. Psalm 138:3. When the angel sounded glory to God, he proclaimed peace and expectation or hope to us, as some read it. Luke 2:14. Number 3. The end of your desire must be observed, for if your end is wrong, you are not likely to prosper. Take heed of drawing down the things of God for your own purposes, for this is evil. It is making God to serve you, for the end rules, and all that leads to it is beneath it. The end is above the means, and all the means do homage to the end, as Jacob's sons' sheaves bowed to Joseph's sheave. They are all for the end's sake. And what a thing is this, to set God in servility to our designs? If the vessels of the temple must not be put to common use, how much less the help of grace? Take heed, therefore, of seeking for yourselves and desiring assistance to advance yourselves. This is to desire that God would lend his help against himself and make his spirit the ladder of our ambition. It is as if a pirate should crave the aid of his prince to rob his country, or as if a subject should ask his sovereign to help him lift the crown from his majesty's head and to set it upon his own head. You may seek for yourselves. Your own ends are allowed you, but they must keep their place. God must be your last end. Come then and say, Lord, help me that I may honor you. I owe all to you, but I can do nothing without you. If I have life from you, I will live for you. What I receive from you, I will lay out for you. Restore unto me the joy of thy salvation. Uphold me with thy free spirit. Psalm 51, verse 12. This is David's prayer, but what is its end? Then will I teach transgressors thy ways, and sinners shall be converted unto thee. Verse 13. It is as if he had said, help me by your hand, and I will help others. Draw me, and I will bring company with me. We will run after thee. Song of Solomon 1, verse 4. Again, the words of Psalm 51 also show the same spirit in David. O Lord, open thou my lips, and my mouth shall show forth thy praise. Psalm 51, verse 15. It is as if he had said, my tongue is like an instrument prepared. If your mercy may but touch the strings, it shall sound forth thy name. I will run the way of thy commandments when thou shalt enlarge my heart. Psalm 119, verse 32. Hold thou me up, and I shall be safe, and I will have respect unto thy statutes continually. Verse 117. Thus be faithful with God, and his help will not fail you while your eye is on him. His hand is with you. Chapter 22. The fourth means of retaining a divine quickening presence is to labor to keep yourself in his favor. Fourthly, keep his favor, and you shall keep his presence. Love delights and dwells with his love. Though the Lord has married you to himself in a covenant that is unchangeable, yet unless you strive to keep his love, you may have less of your husband's company. It is not inevitable transgression, but voluntary offenses which separate between you and God. Take heed then of harboring lusts in imagination or purpose. Take heed of obstinance and rebellion of heart. Unkindness breeds unkindness. Can you reasonably expect that God should be with you when you regard him not? Can two walk in one way that are not agreed? Amos 3, verse 3. Walk then before him in all well-pleasing. Keep close to Jesus Christ, for all the love of the Father is laid out upon the Son and comes to you through him. Be dearly affected to his people, for they are his friends. God dwelleth in such, 1 John 4, verse 12. When you have your friend's good will, you have your friend. And when you fall into straits and lusts, and men and devils shall take up arms against you, if you come and say to God as Jehoram to Jehoshaphat, the king of Moab hath rebelled against me, wilt thou go with me against Moab to battle? God will answer as Jehoshaphat did. I will go up, I am as you are, my people as your people, and my horses as your horses. 2 Kings 3, verse 7. My brethren, you have a sure way to retain the favor of your God. He has shown you the way that is good. And have you not always gone with him who is the delight of his soul, one who is ready at your request to interpose himself and to take up all differences between you and him? Lie not therefore under any guilt, but every day renew your peace and covenant with God by making Christ your advocate. Then shall his face shine upon you, and his spirit shall not be withheld from you. Think it not enough to escape his wrath. A friend not only dreads displeasure, but delights in the favor of his friend. It cannot satisfy a living and loving saint that God's hand is not against him unless it is also with him, or that God is not his adversary unless he is also his friend. A wicked man may fear his wrath, but a good man cannot bear his absence. If then you desire his presence, keep his favor. And because nothing but that which is against his will displeases him, take heed of crossing his will. And for this, I will prescribe two rules. Rule number one, keep up love, for this will make you one heart with God. There will be a harmony in your hatred and his, your desire and his, your delight and his, your will and his. They will all run in the same channel together. Fear may make the life better, but love makes the heart better. It carries a man out of himself and casts his affections and actions into God's mold. It works after his pattern and does all to please him, even as a loving wife subjects her desires to the desire of her husband. Love will hold you in a uniform course of holiness. All strings in life are from decayings in love, for love binds the soul to God. As the hinder wheels of the coach follow the fore wheels, being all conjoined, so the heart is drawn after God by love. Love will not permit you to please yourselves with anything that may not please your God, or to swerve from this rule to gain the world. But as God's love fulfills your will in giving all good, so your love in its measure will fulfill God's will in doing all good. And this is the property of our communion with God. There is a continual intercourse of love with God's will and man's sweetly conjoining in a happy concord, mutually delighting in each other, and mutually fulfilling the desires of each other. God dwelling in his people and they dwelling in him, 1 John 4, verse 16. They cleaving to him and he to them. And let me a little more open the power and efficacy of love in this business, and when I have done, you shall see that it contributes significantly to the keeping of the heart of God. Number one, love sharpens and preserves the desires after God. And what are desires but reachings of the heart? By desires, the soul raises itself after God with extended and spread arms. It will make a man insatiable, always thirsting. And even though the armies of the Philistines are in the way, yet the soul will break through them all for the waters of Bethlehem. Desires after God have much good in them. They capacitate the soul. A hungry man eats much. The promise empties itself freely upon such. Blessed are they that hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. Matthew 5, verse 6. And desires quicken the soul, making it receptive, and so they make it active, Psalm 63, verse 1. It sets all the wheels in motion and will not allow the soul to be at rest. It will not be content in anything unless it is thus fulfilled, but will put out all her sails and oars in strong pursuance. My soul followeth hard after thee, in verse 8. Number 2. Love makes a man resolute, fearless, and invincible, regarding not anything except what he longs for. No terrors can deter him, but as a giant, he rejoices to run his race. It also makes him indefatigable. No labor is too great, but love will find patience. No difficulties so long, but love will find tolerance and forbearance. Nay, love thinks nothing hard. The commandments are not grievous, 1 John 5, verse 3. It is a great advantage to have strength of resolution, for now the soul will be more full in all endeavors. The bow, when fully bent, delivers the arrow with full strength. A piece that is full charged will go off with great force, and its fullness and vigor in doing that are the graces of the action. The soul will be more steadfast. It is hard to stop the soul when she runs with strength. What was said of Aristides is much truer here. you may as well try to stay the sun in heaven as to put a one out of his way. When the resolutions are strong, the soul is like a fenced city. It is hard for temptations to break in. There is only room for Satan to work then. To work when, through coldness of affection, there is weakness in the resolution. A faint denial begets new suits, and a door left unbarred gives easy entrance. When you cleave not to God with full purpose of heart, Acts 11, verse 23, other things may get in between you and God. The steeple does not move because it is settled upon its foundation, but the weather vane is turned with every wind. Number 3. Love makes the soul have a yielding temperament. When God has your love, he has the key of your heart. Love sets him on the throne. All the faculties will bow themselves with offerings to him. Love opens the ears to hear God and moves the hands to work, the feet to walk, and the head to devise for God. God may have anything when he is loved. He never comes out of season when the heart is in this temper. If he says the word, it is done. Love cannot say no to God. It is full of promises, easily entreated. It is not churlish, but of a liberal property. It stands ready for all service and will trample upon all reasonings, respects, contradictions, and rebellions that rise up against God. If God says of the dearest lust, fall upon it, a man will not spare it. If God says, I must have your liberty, a man will say, here it is. If God says, you must be impoverished for my sake, he will say, I am content. If God says, I must have your life for my glory, he will say, Lord, it is yours. Take it. I am yours. Do whatever you will. Love cannot hold back when God asks, but will give all, do all, and suffer all. If God calls, a man will run out of a state, peace, friends, and the world itself. Yea, when a man does much, he thinks it little, or even nothing, and so when he has been laboring for God, he says with David, what shall I render to the Lord? And with the apostle, Lord, what wilt thou have me do? He stops at no cost and is glad he has anything for God, counting this the best use of all, to lay himself out for God, and this the best possession of all, to lose all for God. Number 4. Love will make you fearful of losing God. Every man's fears are equal to his love, so that as the worldly man fears to lose the world, which is his God, so a godly man fears to lose his God. Eli's heart trembled for the ark while he sat watching to hear news of the battle. 1 Samuel 4, verse 13. Fear makes men wise. Proverbs 1, verse 7. It keeps the heart waking and watching. It keeps the eye upon the treasure and soon apprehends the least recess of God from a man. Number 5. Love keeps the intentions right and upon the right end. It inclines to convert the soul in all her ways to her God. What is love but embracing God and such a closing with him? For example, as it finds indigence and want without him, so it has complacence and contentment in him. And that contentment breeds hunger after what it does not have, and gratitude for what it has, and so turns all designs and her whole course to this thing, that she may still be blessed and more blessed in the fruition of God. Love keeps the intentions in due plight in themselves. It makes them actual. Love has a good memory. It carries the stamp of God upon the heart and seldom forgets him. The soul lives where it loves. And as love came in by the eye, so it delights by the same door to run out to God. It makes them vigorous and serious, and so able to order and regulate all the motions of the soul in their right way. Thus love is very useful in this point, to keep you from straying from God, and consequently needful that you may, by holy walking, retain his favor and his presence. Rule number two. Hold this as a fixed truth, that which God wills is best. All that have come to God believe this, or else it would not have come. For what could draw the heart from all its good, but that which is greater than all? But though this is habitually in them, yet they do not always actually believe it. For what should be the cause of their excursions and deviations, but because at present they think it better to walk in another way than the way of God? There are but three causes of voluntary declining in anything. Either it is because the thing is not worth entertainment, or not desirable upon such terms, or because a better thing is presented which we cannot enjoy with it. If a man could carry this truth in his heart, unblotted so that it might always appear legible, it would be a curb to his wandering affections, and would settle the soul on God as on her center. If you believe that you cannot mend yourself or make your condition better in any other way, you would be steadfast and immovable, for you would see a conjunction of God's will and your chief good, so that in crossing his will, you should cross yourselves. And not the Catholic cross either, guys. Use your head when you're reading and listening to this stuff. I'll continue. Wisdom speaks, "He that sinneth against me wrongeth his own soul. All they that hate me love death." Proverbs 8, verse 36. To help you in this, as in a matter of great importance, number one, get a clear knowledge of God, what he is in himself, and of the wisdom of God in the commandments, which are full of reason, and of the purpose of the command, your good, and the nature of that good. Number two, make this knowledge actual. Use it often in your mind. Mind it often. Number three, know that there is reason to give the lie to all opinion of good out of God's way and against his will, because God's love is fully towards you, and so perfect that he has not cut off any good from you. All that is truly good agrees with God's will, as the formality of truth is the agreement that it has with the mind of God, so the verity of goodness is the agreement that it has with the will of God. And again, all true good is from him, and eminently in him. Therefore, that which stands in opposition to him cannot be good. Consider the source of misapprehensions of this truth. Man is either covered with darkness or clouded with passion, being naturally blind so as to call evil good and good evil. And sometimes good men are clouded, and with a frenzy of passion become distempered, and so judge something good, which, when they become sober, they will count the greatest evil. Which is the truest judgment, that of a man drunk and not himself, or that of a man that is calm, clear, and himself? I'll take a moment there to intercede. I'm not thinking that Joseph Simmons is actually referring to a man that is specifically drunk with alcohol, but necessarily drunk with whatever has overcome him, whether it be his own pride, whether it be narcissism, whatever. I wouldn't necessarily hold that to be being drunk on alcohol. Anyway, I'll continue. Number four, remember that you must needs err in judging that to be good which you cannot entertain with contentment. But a godly man finds these two things as sure notes of the true evil in every sin: fear before and in commission of it, and pain and repentance after, and that forever. Number five. When you see two conflicting counsels, weigh well these two things: the counselors and the reasons. Letter A. First, weigh the counselors. Carefully consider who they are that stand up to oppose God, and you shall find that they which may disable their testimony. They can be but one of these, either your own lusts or Satan's suggestions and temptations. As for your lusts, consider that they cannot incline to any type of good which God allows not, All the difference between God and them is in the time, measure, order, manner, and means. And therefore, since you have the same good in God's way, is it wisdom for circumstances to hazard your own soul? Lusts urge without reason. Therefore, they are called foolish lusts and brutish. It is true that they may have a color of reason, but such reason as a spark of wisdom would clearly see to be folly. The order of reason and nature is that your affections should spring from your judgment, and not your judgment from your affections. Affections are blind guides. Lust can see nothing but what is present and sensual. It does not see the spiritual evil or the future calamity and doleful consequences of sin. Now, it is against reason to be so improvidentially reckless. Improvidently reckless. Part 2. As for Satan, who seeks in all to destroy, what can be expected by his counsel? And let this prevail with you, that all opinion of good that which is against the will of God is either directly or indirectly from Satan. I'll say that again. Let this prevail with you, that all opinion of good in that which is against the will of God is either directly or indirectly from Satan. Therefore, see what cause you have to believe that that which God wills is best. And if you can carry this truth engraved upon you, it will be as a wall to limit and shut up your inordinate affections, and to shut out and break the force of Satan's temptations. You begin to be taken when you are seduced, and if this fort had stood, you would have been safe, and if you keep to God's will in all, you shall have his favor, and consequently his presence in all. B. Second, weigh the arguments that are used on both sides, for you shall better judge between them and this. Number 1. God urges debt. You are his creatures. You live at his cost and charges. He has done you good and not evil all your days. Can your lusts plead this? Whence come fears, grief, pain, want, death, and hell, but from sin? You are then debtors, not to the flesh to live after lusts, Romans 8, verse 12. Number 2, God proposes good without evil. Can your lusts do so? Number 3, God proposes eternal good, but the pleasures of sin are but for a moment. Number 4, God proposes a certain good, but lust cannot. Ambition may reach for honors that it may never attain. Covetousness may hunt for riches which it can never find. Number 5. God proposes all good, but lust only some particular good. Voluptuousness proposes pleasure, but not dignity, and so forth. Number 6. God proposes good to the posterity, but can lust do this? No, it draws to evil without care of posterity, yea, to the shame and calamity of posterity. And finally, number 7, God proposes true good, that which comforts and gives life indeed, but all the pro-offers of lust are delusions. Solomon tried them. Many spies have traversed this land and find it a continent of lying vanities and true miseries. Therefore, keep close to God, that you may have his favor and presence with you.